Welcome everybody to freshly restarted Lights on Europe with my dear new co-host Rick Zednik and our very, very special guest. We couldn't wish for anybody more inspiring given the intention that we have for this episode and the season, which you can know more about if you tune into our previous one, very short one, to understand why it's a different setup and why we are restarting now after several years of my maternity break, which meant a break for Lights on Europe. So here we go. Rick, tell us, why is this superwoman with us?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have with us somebody who was elected to the European Parliament at the young age of 33, re-elected 5 years later at 38 when she became vice president of the European Parliament. So served 10 full years in the European Parliament and then made a pivot away from politics and into starting a global organization called Women Political Leaders, WPL. And it's the global network of women presidents, prime ministers, parliamentarians at the national level. So really, really pleased to welcome here Silvana Kochmany.
Hello, Silvana.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And we also have your dog with us, so I hope everybody's going to hear him. So my first question is, before we dive into understanding your political journey, because that's what I'm excited to understand more about, is this moment of you deciding to set up WPL? Because this is how all three of us know each other, through the Women Empowerment Bubble in Brussels. And I wonder, because we hear it a lot in the diversity and inclusion conversations, that the women empowerment space is already so overcrowded. And so how was it in your moment of decision? Were you also told, like most of the solopreneurs and new-founded, you know, project owners who are told this already exists and don't go in there, you've got no space, this is a waste of energy?
Well, you know, when I was in the European Parliament, it became quite...
This is good. Feel free to continue. Let's blame it on the dog.
Different things, something like that. No, we'll. You can cut it out, right? You
sure.
Can cut this out.
We keep it.
Because the phone isn't quite stable. So when I was in the European Parliament, it was quite obvious that politics is a relatively new space for women. The European Parliament isn't the worst place for a woman to be elected to, because the numbers of women are steadily going up since 1979, the first election. Every time more women get elected until now, and I hope it's going to continue that way. But there's a big difference in which committees women serve in. For example, the Women's Committee or the Gender Equality Committee, it's almost entirely women, even though it's for equality between men and women. And then in the Foreign Affairs Committee, it's very few women. So there's a big difference in where do women get access to the power share. And you mentioned that the DEI space is overcrowded. Well, in politics, it's actually not, because there are maybe national organizations, there are party political organizations, but a global network of women politicians, that did not exist. And politics, it's so crucial to know the unwritten rules, the things that are going on behind the scenes, because that's what helps people, and it helps men for hundreds of years and women only for a much shorter time, to stay in power and have access to the decision-making that is so crucial for all society.
Do you guys, because both of you were involved with WPL, do you want to clarify which part of the life cycle of a political journey WPL actually focuses on? Because my head goes into how do we attract more women into politics and all the issues that keep them away from this potentially toxic life experience. Is this also what you care for as an organization, or which part is it?
So we work with the women that are in political power, that are in elected or appointed positions. The reality is that one out of six women that is in her first mandate leaves it before the end of this first mandate. So you get elected, but you don't stay until the end of
worldwide,
the term that you elected for. Worldwide, one out of six. And that shows what you describe as
the reasons.
You know, we did two times studies in what are the barriers for women in politics. Why is it that more than 90% of the world's presidents, prime ministers are in 2024? They're still men, like more than 90%. More than 80% of the ministers worldwide are men. And there's hardly any country around the world which says, you're a woman, you can't run for politics, you can't become that political leader.
Legally wise.
So we looked into that. And what's really interesting, it doesn't exactly matter where you are. If you're in Slovakia, if you're in Germany, if you're in Argentina, or if you're in Thailand, there are systemic barriers that are for women there, which don't exist for men. It's the classical place of a woman. Do women belong in politics? Do women belong to decision-making, to leadership? It's about access to finance that starts with the campaign. Women have much less campaign finance than men. And then also when you're in politics later elected, to realize your political promises, your ideas, you also need budget. Again, women percentage-wise have much smaller access to the budgets that need to be put in place for realizing politics. There are violence issues increasingly a big, big problem. More than 85% of the worldwide surveyed women politicians said that they experience online violence, and more than 10% physical violence. My personal belief is that the numbers are actually way higher, because what happens also, and that's a bit of a self-protection measure, is that you kind of say, oh, you know, I just ignore it, because I don't want to be held back by that. Mm. And then it sometimes then makes you just really deny this threat to be able to go on. So I think online, it's probably closer to 100% in my personal view.
Can I ask someone? So that's one thing that you said that you think is because it sounds like you're saying it's a trend, that there's more of this kind of violence than there was. And you know, between your 10 years in the European Parliament, and I know WPL just celebrated 10 years anniversary. So over these 20 years that you've been able to see this firsthand, what has improved? I mean, you've talked about that's one thing that's gotten worse, but are there things that are getting better? Are there...
I believe there is more awareness of that, of the relevance to have a real representation of society in the political leadership. So before you had a lot, there weren't many voices saying, you know, we're more than 50% of society. We as women, we need to be represented in decision making. We bring our own experiences, our perspectives to the table. And I'm not saying that women are the better people, don't get me wrong here, but what really matters is that you have the different experiences, the different perspectives, different backgrounds around the decision-making table. And that goes for any policy area. It goes for transport, it goes for foreign affairs, it goes for social affairs. And that the awareness for that is much bigger. There is also more women who have had the experience of being in politics, willing to share and passing on knowledge and trying to recruit more women into politics. And there's this sentence that I really love, which was coined by the two times former president of Chile and the first woman who led UN Women. And she said, if one woman goes into politics, it changes her. If many women go into politics, it changes policies and politics. And that's very true. And it's for the better of everybody if that's happening.
So I'm wondering, what does it take for a woman to decide, obviously, to go into it? Rick said it's been over 20 years for you in this sector, which means you were going into it when the world was different, right? It was pre-social media era. So probably the... When you say now there's higher awareness, it's also probably proportionate to the challenge that women deal with when they're going for it. Maybe the challenges wasn't that huge, but also the awareness was lower. And so it's probably a similar story of an individual mind and heart struggle that an individual woman has. And probably that story of her life engagement isn't that different. And so can you still tune into that moment? How was it for you back then? What made you realize that you had what it takes? Or at least what made you think you had hope that you're going to succeed?
You know, I think there are many, many, many women who have what it takes. Women are so so clear in taking responsibilities if it's in their immediate environments, if it's like start in their families, but also then in their cities or in many of the civil society organizations, if it's climate activism, if it's for minority groups, if it's for culture, the kind of the step to go into politics is because politics seems to be almost a bit a world apart. But politics is everything. Politics is everybody. We're in a democracy. So every person is part of politics. And this starts by exercising your voting right, but then also having a loud voice. And then if you say, well, I don't want to just knock at the doors and say, please, you decide this way. I want to be part of those that are deciding. That's then the step to do, to go into politics. And sometimes it also seems to come across as a life sentence almost. Like if you decide to go into politics, that's where you're stuck forever. But that's not true. It's like many other jobs that have changed so much in the last years that you are elected for a certain time to represent the people. And then either you continue or not. And it's sometimes your own decision, sometimes the decision of the voters. So I think there are some things to demystify on politics to make it more open and more accessible. And then secondly, I think the challenges today, they are definitely different, but also the opportunities are different. You know, before social media, you really were depending on the goodwill of some journalists to write about you, to mention you, but also how they mentioned you. Now, with social media, as a politician, you have direct communication access to your audience, which is a complete game changer, of course. And this filter of who gets relevant is something that you can actively work on. Before, it was left to some TV or newspaper journalist. And that's a big change.
I'm interested, Silvana, as you think about all the wisdom you've been able to accumulate over these 20 years, and all, not just from your personal experience, but all these different cases you've been able to learn from by meeting people from all around the world. You know, if you were to think back 20 years at sort of yourself, you know, going 20 years back, and what do you wish you had known, or thinking of somebody else who's now in a similar position, you know, a young woman who's maybe thinking to enter politics and isn't sure whether it's for them, and they've got all sorts of concerns, and people probably saying, you know, why put yourself through the pains that it involves? What would your advice be?
My advice would be to ensure that you have very close to you a group of real friends or family who you can continue to be trusting with. Because what you need to do, and that's part of most leadership jobs, right? Is that you will encounter a lot of people projecting their ideas on you, negative and positive. And this can become very confusing because you wonder, like, who am I? Am I the person who is up there on the poster and where people write some comments to? Or am I still myself? And, you know, to have those places where you have safety in a way for you as yourself with your friends, because you have to almost actively understand that there is the public person and then there's the private person. And that sounds a bit weird, but it's really important for being able to go through this and not be affected by all the requests, the criticism, the ideas that people have for you, because you need to still always look at yourself and be happy with who you are and what you do, and not to forget that. Mm-hmm.
This is, for me, this is the most interesting and challenging aspect of the design formula of politics these days. Like, how do you draw the line or merge the request for being authentic and relatable and also being successful, right? And that is the big conversation of that we have around feminine leadership also, like what is the new culture and the possibility that women bring into political arena. If they dare to be more themselves and more feminine and more self-expressed in a way they would desire to be. But then you have all these people, as you're saying, all these marketing gurus and the experts who want us to be on the billboards and want us to succeed. And as you're saying, there's also a big business case and a lot of sponsors and money around these people. That's why the female candidates are under so much pressure to become somebody's projection of what a successful politician should look like. And so what have you seen from the WPL space? When you look at the success stories of most successful women out there, how do you create a way of succeeding, but also staying true to who you want to become in that space?
I think it's crucial that first of all, you're aware of that dynamic, what you describe, that you go into this knowing that this is happening. That there is this clarity on it, that you're not surprised by this happening. That's, I think, what you can learn by talking to other politicians or to former politicians, because it doesn't matter where in the world you are a politician, that's what's happening, right? And to have this awareness and be prepared for it, then there you can take some technical advice in terms of that, for example, I know of very, very senior women politicians that who decided to not manage their social media accounts themselves, but have the essence of it brought to them by their teams. And this is not because they aren't capable of doing social media themselves or anything. It's because the easiness of having so many negative social media messages to you, which then really which impacts your ability to go out there and be positive and say, we're going to do this. We can, you know, after all, you're doing a service to society, right? But if you are confronted with all the negativity all the time, this can quite drag you down. So if you're starting politics, if you can motivate some or bring on some volunteers with you who are these filters, so that you can see the important criticism that really is factual, that matters, but also in a way to protect yourself from that. And then setting up a network between peers, and this is probably easiest across borders because then you don't compete with each other, and to have these exchanges and say, okay, this is what's happening to me, and this is how I feel about it. How do you handle this? It really is cathartic, but also you can learn some tips and tricks on how to deal with situations.
I'm curious, Silvana, most of what you've described, I would say, is actually not even gender specific, right? Like young men who are trying to enter politics probably have some of the same doubts. You know, maybe it differs a little bit, but my question to you would be, so we've been talking, and I think with good reason, about the experience for women in politics, but what can men do to also move this forwards?
Well, it's a really good point, Rick. I mean, because yes, there's also, I'm sure there's also many men questioning their ability to join politics. However, what's a critical difference is how men are sort of welcomed in that space and how women are not. We've done plenty of data research on this, on what people's perceptions are on suitability for leadership of men or women. And unfortunately, in the most places, most countries that we surveyed, people still think that men are better capable of leadership than women are, which is in stark contrast to the reality that we live in with the multiple global crises that we have, which seem to be just increasing and not so solvable. And so if that's good leadership, well, I mean, good luck, right? But I think what men can definitely do is just do what's part of the UN Charter and part of most countries' constitutions is treat women as equals, criticize them for what they say and not what they look like, champion them for their successes, team up with them, amplify their statement. So the classic situation is, and it's been described so many times, a woman says something, it's vastly ignored, man says the very same thing, he gets applause for it. If the man, instead of repeating and keeping the applause for himself, would say, as Lucia was just saying, I think she's right, and then just emphasizing that it was her thought so that she gets the credit for what she deserves to get the credit. So these are things that men can do and which makes men just actually stronger and more credible leaders when they behave like that.
You know what I'm thinking about? How it keeps on coming back to the same principles, and that's probably also the case why WPL exists. Because we see the female politicians stepping down in different continents. We've also, as I've experienced at one of your summits, the European female politicians struggle with quite similar things as the African leaders that I had a chance to meet there. And so I'm wondering whether there is an answer to the question that I was sitting with, and that is there any specifics of challenges or support required by women in post-communist countries? Because we are both of us very active in Slovakia's political space these days in Central Europe. Do you see a different dynamics in culturally determined dynamics in the continents you deal with, or not really? And it keeps on coming back to the, you know, inner work and empowerment and building the communities, and it doesn't really matter where we look at globally.
Well, on the one hand, of course, every country has its own story and own traditions, own political history. And so one can't generalize, let's say, all post-communist countries or all sub-Saharan countries or all Spanish-speaking countries. But on the other hand, and that's what our data studies showed, is that the global phenomenon is that there are certain specific barriers for women, and the prejudices, the stereotypes that women have to go against in addition to their political competitors, there are the variations of that in different parts of the world, but it's basically everywhere the same. And some countries have done better than others. I mean, Japan, for example, has less than 10% of women parliamentarians, right? And other countries have like Iceland or Denmark have a way higher number of women in politics, and perpetually so. But still, if you talk to them, like if you talk to the Icelanders, they say, oh no, we're not there yet. We don't have a real equal society where women have the same opportunities. So, I can't really say that there's one thing that makes post-communist countries stand apart to other parts.
Rick, what's your take on this? You know, the spaces, you know, across from Slovakia all the way to the Americas.
Do you know? So, the one thing that I guess I would say is that I think, in a place like Slovakia specifically, there has been, I mean, it's, I think it's a more conservative society, and that's partly probably due to the post-communist experience, but also probably for other factors. I mean, it's still a relatively Christian society, actually, right? It's in Slovakia. So I think it's conservative and traditional. So I think that, there's still a little bit, the traditional gender roles are more ingrained and harder to break out of, and again, I think, I don't know, actually, that I don't know if that was a communist issue. That may be something that's more, you know, based around issues of religion and others. I definitely think a tough one. It doesn't change quickly. It doesn't change quickly. And which just leads me to the question I wanted to ask, my last question. So I'm sure Lucy will have something else. But I just, in terms of Silvana, when you think ahead, and, you know, whether it's 2030, 2040, 2050, you can choose the time horizon. But, you know, what's the world that you hope to live to see?
Well, I mean, that's my wish, and there is my sense of realism. So let's pick something in between, maybe 2040. I would hope that at least on the international multilateral places that we have equality, like in the European Parliament, that we have 50-50. The EU Commission already has 50-50. We need a woman UN Secretary General. We need alternation and who chairs the General Assembly of the United Nations. I'm mentioning that because they have all those country quotas. So it's no problem for them to decide, oh, we need to make sure that the different countries of the world are represented. And as there already is such a system in place, let's just add the real quota thing, which is about 50-50 of society. And those roles are more than just symbolic because they're very visible and it has trickle-down effect. And I hope that more women, because women get better and better educated, are more and more successful in their careers, that they enter the spaces of politics, and that maybe by 2040, we are at 40% of women parliamentarians around the world. Let's put this as a goal from
40. So 40 by 2040. 40 by 40.
Yes. Yes.
These narratives make a lot of us angry, right? Because we are in this phase for so long, and then we keep on postponing the time horizon, and we're like, okay, we're not going to see the impact of our work. And then everybody starts shifting from them being an activist into, oh, I'm doing it for my daughter, and maybe she will live in a different world. And then we're just passing on the burden. And so my final question would be, what would be your wildest request? Like, if really sky was the limit, what would be the one thing that you would ask for to, like, get this done in 10 years? We know that when there's pandemic, resources can be mobilized. When there's war, resources can be mobilized. Is this about money being invested into, you know, every female candidate getting money from somewhere, from her campaign, so she succeeds? Or is this about a massive European Union program for education, about political literacy dedicated for girls, right? Like, what would it be for you if you were to be paid your salary only in 10 years in case this target is delivered?
Good incentive. So my wildest dreams doesn't really cost any money, actually, because if we look at Mexico, which is a G20 country, what they did, they changed both their constitution as well as the electoral law and made it obligatory to have 50-50 in both chambers, parliament and senate, held by women and men. 50-50, so parity. There was no quota, it was parity. And this was a law change. Constitution and electoral and secondary law. So we can do that. And then for the next elections, there have to be more women candidates, because men can only run if there are as many women candidates. And I can assure you, I'm sure every man who wants to be elected will find a woman who also wants to get elected, because then it's about not a woman taking away his seat, but he can only get a seat if she gets one too, right? So that changes completely the dynamic in politics, and then we'll have other policy changes following. So if we do this at the like in the EU countries, I'm from Germany. It's also a relatively conservative country, but let's push for it.
Rick, what's your hope that we're going to elect leaders in the European Union at least this year to pass on these laws?
Oh, gosh. I mean, as Solana started by saying, the European Parliament is relatively good in terms of getting close to parity. Yeah. So hopefully that continues to get closer and closer to real parity this year.
Mm. So thank you so much. I'd like us to conclude there. Everybody listening to us and watching us, please, in your comments, tag somebody who would care and who can tag another woman who deserves to be supported in her political campaign this year. Thank you.
Savannah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Lucia. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you for listening. For follow-up, you can find us on all major podcast platforms and all social media platforms, including our Instagram, Lights on Europe. So feel free to go there now and leave us your review, likes, feedback, as well as tips on who would you like to hear interviewed next time. Bye!